Last time on the Skip and Josh podcast.
A couple short stories I want to tell you, which no one is going to care about, including you. Something remarkable happened in my household this week. For the first time in more than 10 years, I ran out of Montreal bagels.
It's a crisis. It's a real crisis.
You're listening to the Skip and Josh podcast with Skip Sherman and Josh Obadia.
Okay, Skip, so last time we never told the listeners what topic we were going to do next. So today's topic is actually going to be favorite albums, our favorite albums from the 1990s. And we're going to get to that in a couple of minutes. But actually, I wanted to tell you something. I started listening to a podcast. It's called Origins. You've listened to it, I know. And for those who don't know, Origins, I don't know how to describe it because they always change the subject and then, or the topic, and then they do like 5 or 6 or 7 episodes on that topic, and then you don't hear from them for a few months, and then they do another topic. So I don't know how to even describe that.
It's really like what topics he wants to do, the host, Jim Miller, right?
Right, right.
Like, he's a fan of Almost Famous, so he did a season of Almost Famous, right? Or they did the origins of Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yeah, and he did ESPN. Yeah.
Well, the ESPN one is more newsy, but yeah. So there's a new kind of topic? Or
No, there isn't a new one, but I had never listened to the Almost Famous chapter, if you want to call it a chapter.
It's terrific. I mean, if you're a fan of the movie, it's a terrific... Yeah.
So I started listening to it this week, and it's actually very good. And it's, even though I've seen the movie at least twice, it's making me want to see the movie again.
You've only seen it twice.
I guess. I don't know. How many times? Yeah, I guess I saw it at the theater maybe, and then one other time. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's good. It's very good. They talk about like who they originally wanted to cast and the different roles.
I know. I was stunned when I heard like all these people they had, and then all of a sudden they lost all of them.
And it's also interesting because it gives you an insight into something that we don't usually see, which I think is very common in Hollywood, how long it took for the movie to get made. And when I say get made, I don't mean filming it. Like how long it took for, like, from the time he had the idea to make this movie till the time they started filming, it's years, right? Until they get this whole thing off the ground. So it's quite interesting, all the goings on, you know, to get a movie made.
And the other thing I didn't know is it's basically a story of his life.
Oh, that I knew from the beginning.
I didn't know that.
And the band, what is the name of the band in the movie?
Stillwater.
Yeah, Stillwater. They're obviously not a real band, but they're supposed to be an amalgamation of all the bands that he covered. Although I feel that most of what he's most famous for traveling around following Led Zeppelin, I think.
Okay, I thought it was the Allman Brothers Band.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So like Stillwater is, you know, it's an amalgamation of all his experiences, you know.
So anyway, I started listening to it. It's a good listen. And mm-hmm. you've already listened, so yeah. I'm not telling you anything you don't know.
No, for sure. And by the way, I did took your recommendation from last week, and I listened to the Edge Houston Astros podcast.
Okay.
I binged it. Like I listened to it like in like less than 2 days. I listened to the whole thing. It's quite fascinating, actually. I was really, really like, I couldn't wait to listen to the next one. You know, I mean, it's not like a cliffhanger. I know exactly what happened, right? They got caught cheating, but it leads up to the fact that they got caught cheating. The fact that they got cheating is sort of anticlimactic. It's all the other details that you hear in the podcast that are much more interesting. The thing that I didn't know, and when they said it, I was like, how stupid am I for not knowing this, is that all the cheating that's going on, and not just the Astros, other teams, it's all because Major League Baseball let the teams have a TV next to the dugout so they could quickly look if they wanted to do instant replay challenges.
Right, right.
And that the fact that there was a TV so easily accessible to the managers and the staff right adjacent to the dugout caused all this, right? Like,
right. Except the Astros took it a step further and then started banging on trash cans.
But the more I listen to this podcast, the more I'm convinced. And I know you said it before, like everybody's cheating. But the more I listen to this, the more I feel that other teams were doing the same stuff. Maybe it wasn't a trash can. Maybe it was, I don't know what, but other teams were doing stuff. They just didn't get caught.
Right. I mean, the Red Sox sort of did get caught, but they got a slap on the wrist in comparison to what the Astros got.
Are you talking about the Apple Watch, or are you talking about after?
I'm talking about after, what the year that they won the World Series.
Yes, yes. But even before that, the Red Sox got like a slap on the wrist because there was this thing with like someone was wearing an Apple Watch, right? So, I mean, look, obviously they can't, it's very hard for Major League Baseball to sort of keep up with the technology. Just like in any sport or anything, the cheaters always have the advantage, right? Because they're the ones that are, their criminal minds are coming up with these really innovative ways to cheat, and the law enforcement, the sports, have to, like, they can only come up with the punishments after they know what people are doing. So they're always a step behind.
There's two things I want to say. One is, so you've listened to the whole thing, so I'm not going to spoil it for you, right?
No. Well, there's nothing to spoil, really.
No, but there was a very important nugget of information in the last episode that I was not aware of. And that is that one of the people who started this whole thing, or maybe not started it, but certainly continued it, it's like every team has at least one person who you don't even know. Like, it's not, he's not someone famous. He's not someone important. He's not high on the payroll. He's like just some dude that works in the clubhouse that helps out the players. And this guy doesn't get paid very much money. But because he helps out the players, they give him these huge tips at the end of the season. And so obviously he's going to do whatever he can to help them because he wants to get more tips. So he ends up getting more money through tips from the players than what his actual salary is.
Right.
So where's his allegiance going to lie? Obviously with the players. So he doesn't care that he's giving them information that maybe he's not supposed to give them.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's why this all happened. And I'm assuming every team has someone like that. Anyway, yeah, that's one thing I wanted to mention. Another thing, and this has nothing to do with the podcast, but tell me something. You know, you've played baseball, right? I mean, obviously little league, not professional.
Yeah.
And you were a catcher, actually.
Yeah.
Did you ever give signs to the pitcher, or did you just let him throw what he wanted?
No, because the level I played at, you were just hoping the pitcher could throw a strike.
Right. So let me ask you a question. If the catcher didn't give any signs and the pitcher just threw what he wanted, how terrible would that be?
I thought of that too. I was like, why? Because you know, did they talk about it in this podcast or did I read about it separately? The reason why catchers crouch is because back in the 1800s, they just used to bend over and just stand there sort of hunched. But then when they started to give signs, they said, oh, now we got to crouch because the other teams could see the signs. The whole reason why catchers crouch down is to hide their fingers. And why can't the pitcher just throw what he wants? Is it because the catcher sort of has to know what's coming?
Well, I mean, obviously it's harder to catch, you know, a curveball than it is to catch a fastball, and you sort of need to know. But I mean, if you're a good enough catcher, which all these catchers are...
I thought the same thing, Josh. I was like, why can't the pitcher just call his own game? Where did this thing of the catcher calling the game start?
And then if you took that away, then you wouldn't have any more issues.
Anyways, baseball. What are we going to do? So let's get into look, Josh, we didn't do the draft. We told people we were going to do another draft of topics. And then at the end of the last episode, we sort of just decided, no, we're just going to go week to week. And that's mostly because of our own personal schedules. And we don't want to get locked in on something that we can't deliver. So this week we're going to do our favorite albums from the 1990s. And like, how hard was it for you to do this list?
Actually, it was pretty easy. And I'll tell you why. This was one of the few topics that we've done that I didn't really have to do any research. I didn't have to look anything up on the internet. All I did was I realized that probably 80% of the CDs that I've purchased were purchased in the 1990s. And so even though I don't listen to CDs anymore, and by the way, do your kids know what a compact disc is?
Yeah, they do because when they were little, we still had CDs. But yeah, you're right. It's gone, you know?
So even though I don't listen to my CDs anymore, I still have like a couple of boxes with all my CDs. So all I did was I opened the box, I looked through them, and I pulled out the ones I liked the best. And I think I pulled out about 20 or so. And then from there, I took my favorite ones. And that was how I made my list. It was very easy.
It's interesting that you say that most of your music's from the 90s. Well, mine too. Like that there's no doubt also the 90s is, well, the 90s was the biggest decade for music. Like, if you read up about the music business, the 90s was the boom of the music industry. They sold more records, they sold more albums, they sold more CDs. The CDs actually are a big part of that. The CD, the medium itself. And this is the time when record companies were coming out and signing bands left, right, and center. And actually, it was the one time where all the styles of music sort of converged, right? Like, I mean, look, our lists are going to be rock and alt rock. That's what our lists are going to be, because that's what we like. But I mean, in the 90s, like, you had rap and hip hop sort of starting to become like mainstream, which today they're the dominant, you know, style. And you had like these girl bands and boy bands, you know, like the Spice Girls and like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and like all kinds of stuff like that. And it's just like a great time for music, honestly. So I can't wait to hear your list, actually. I'm pretty like, I mean, I've said it before, like, we like sort of the same music, but I lean towards the classic rock style, and you definitely lean towards the alternative. But it was during the 90s where you really influenced me the most.
That's because we lived together for a few years.
Yeah, and I discovered a lot of bands and music that I might not have discovered if it wasn't for you. And some of those bands are going to be in this list. But I don't know. I can't wait to see like if we're going to have any of the same or I'm not sure where it's going to go. But I did tell you some of my ground rules. I discounted, like you said, in text, like greatest hits obviously doesn't count. I discounted soundtracks, which was a little bit unfair. But
you should discount them. It's not one artist. You have to discount those.
Yeah, you're right. It's not one artist. But I mean, there are some great soundtracks, especially in the 90s that we could have put in.
But that's an episode for another day.
Yeah. And I did keep it at one per artist. And it was a bit unfair, especially to one artist on the list. One band on the list could have easily been in here twice, and I only put them in once. Anyways. And actually, I still could flip a coin as to which album of that band could get in my list. But I'll get to that when I reveal it. And we are going to go top nine because, you know, the 90s and nine. And actually, like, for example, of Sirius Satellite XM, you know, if you listen to the 90s station, it's the 90s on nine. You know, the 80s is channel 8, the 70s is channel 7, mm-hmm. The 90s is channel 9. So we're going to do top nine albums of the 90s. And it's interesting that you asked me if my kids know what a CD is. The concept of an album is also a bit of a foreign thing because music is so on demand now. Like, it's all Spotify and Apple Music, and you can just get, you like one song, you just get one song, you know? And back in those days of buying CDs, we used to take a chance. You know, you like one song on an album and you're like, should I buy the CD or not? And you're like, okay, I'm going to go for it, you know?
And then it's very rare that you have, even in my favorite, and you'll see the list eventually, you'll hear the list eventually, but even in my favorites, it's very rare that you have an album that's great from song one to the last song. It's very rare that you have that.
It is rare. There are a few albums on here where you can just listen to it through and through. And that was part of my criteria for making the list. Like, I had two things sort of when I made this list. It was like, how much did I listen to this album? Not just at the time, because there's some albums that are just in my honorable mention that at the time that I purchased those CDs, I listened to them nonstop, 24 hours a day. But do I still listen to that album now was part of my decision making. Like, how does it stand up? You know, like, will I still put that on now? Some of them are like, not as much. And some of them that ended up being high on the list, obviously I still keep listening. So that means I've been listening to them for a good almost 30 years, 25, you know, 20 to 30 years, right?
So, you know, obviously you've got an iPhone and you listen to songs. I don't know if you ever, because I think you actually add songs to your iPhone just by, because you have an Apple subscription, right?
Yeah, we have Apple Music, so I can just add as I want.
But I actually have iTunes on my computer, and I actually connect my phone to my computer once in a while, and I add new songs. And then when you do that, I don't know if you're aware, you must be aware, it tells you how many times you've listened to each song. So, like, I, you know, it's interesting to see, oh, I've listened to this song, you know, 50 times, and I've listened to this song only 5 times, whatever. I would love to know, it's obviously impossible to do this, but I would love to know if someone was keeping track of every time I listened to each CD back in the 90s. I'd be interested to see, oh, I listened to this one 20 times, I listened to this one 30 times, so on and so forth. Unfortunately, we can't do that, but...
There are albums in this list where the car I had in the 90s didn't have a CD player, right? So I know that there's some albums in here that I bought the CD and I recorded onto a cassette just so I could listen to it in the car, right? That, like, that was a thing. I mean, you had the fancy CD player in your trunk that, you know, picked
up. Yeah, that held 10 different albums at once.
So Josh, the 90s, let's go back to the 90s, right? I wrote down some important events from the 90s to refresh your memory and to set the stage so people could remember what was going on during the time of all this music we're about to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So Friends debuted in the 90s.
Yes.
There was the Macarena.
Oi.
There was, like I said, there was the girl bands like the Spice Girls and Destiny's Child and the boy bands like NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys. Bill Clinton was the president during most of this time. We all remember the big scandal with Monica Lewinsky. And there was some really big movies, Titanic, Clueless. Clueless is like become an iconic movie of the 90s. And then, of course, the O.J. Simpson trial, which took over most of our lives for a period of time. And then at the end of the 90s, the big thing was the Y2K, right? We were all freaked out in 1999 when all our clocks were going to change to 2000 and everything was going to, the world was going to end.
I think there was too much hype made about that, but maybe I'm wrong.
There was, because nothing happened.
Right, but when I say this to people, they say nothing happened because they prepared in advance. But had they not, something would have happened. But I don't know if I believe that.
That is entirely possible, but we'll actually never know. Right?
No.
Yeah. All right, so my topic, right?
Your topic, but before we get into the list, I know you have a bunch of honorable mentions.
Tons. Yeah.
And I'm wondering if it makes sense that we do the honorable mentions first, because don't you want to end with the best one?
Yeah. Okay. Let's do that. So if I name a band here, then you know it's not in my list. It's pretty like it's a reveal now, right?
That's okay. I still don't know what's in your list.
So some of my honorable mentions that didn't make it, and this is in no particular order.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. U2, Achtung Baby, Eric Clapton, Unplugged. David Berwald, Bedtime Stories, Matthew Sweet, Girlfriend, Counting Crows, August and Everything After, Delamitri, Change Everything, Gin Blossoms, two albums, New Miserable Experience, and Congratulations, I'm Sorry. One of the biggest albums of the 90s in terms of rock, Hootie and the Blowfish, Crack Rearview, Matchbox 20, Yourself and Someone Like You, REM, Out of Time, The Wallflowers, Bringing Down the Horse, Sarah McLachlan, Fumbling Towards Ecstasy, Chantal Kreviazuk, Under These Rocks and Stones, Oasis, What's the Story, Morning Glory, and the tragically hip Road Apples, which tells you something about my list.
Okay, so here's my honorable mentions, and I think I kept my honorable mentions to 10.
Mm-hmm.
Pearl Jam, Vitology, tragically hip, Phantom Power, Blur, Park Life, Cake, Prolonging the Magic, Cracker, Kerosene Hat.
Nice.
The Cranberries, Everybody Else Is Doing It, So Why Can't We?
Yeah.
Matchbox 20, Yourself or Someone Like You. Toad the Wet Sprocket, Fear. Smashing Pumpkins, Siamese Dream.
Yeah.
Sloan, Smeared. And Weezer, the album doesn't have a name, but it's known as the Blue Album.
Right, okay. There's some album... Okay, that's interesting because... I really feel that you have artists that are in your, that were just mentioned that are in your list, right?
Yes.
With other albums.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
So now we can get to the real list.
Number 9.
So we're going to start off with my number 9. And that is the Canadian band Blue Rodeo and the 1992 album Lost Together.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So I it's actually not my favorite Blue Rodeo album. I like their first two albums the best, but those came out in the 80s, right? So there's like the original Blue Rodeo album and then Diamond Mine. But Lost Together is still a fantastic album and actually may have their best song, which is the song Lost Together. I think it's probably their best song, although I'm more I'm more partial to the Jim Cuddy songs than the Greg Keelor songs. But Lost Together is certainly, like, it might be their best song. And then, I mean, like I said, I like the Jim Cuddy songs because his voice is gorgeous. And there's a couple of songs on this album, for example, Rain on Me and Last to Know, where his voice really, really shines through. And it's an extremely strong album from start to finish. So that's for all our American listeners who actually have no idea who Blue Rodeo is, but you can definitely check them out.
Okay, so number 9 on my list is Garbage. And this is another one of those albums that doesn't have a name. And lead singer of Garbage is Shirley Manson. She's born in 1966. She's Scottish. I really like her voice. And of course, I like the songs Only Happy When It Rains and Stupid Girl. And I did listen to this CD quite a lot when I purchased it. I do recall listening to it quite
year?
A lot.
What year did it come out, Josh?
Thank you. Sorry, I should have mentioned that. That's 1995.
Yeah. So we were living together during this time. And I remember that this was a huge album for you. You wore that CD out. Yeah.
By the way, so the 90s, as you mentioned, were great. But is it apex or climax of the 90s? Was definitely 1994-95.
Oh, I like that. I like how you're proclaiming that.
Yeah, no, it's just my opinion. You can disagree if you'd like.
Number 8.
All right, so my number 8 is an artist that I know you don't like and you don't care for. Definitely not on your list. And that is John Hiatt, and the album's called Stolen Moments, and it just snuck into my list in 1990 was the release.
Just barely. But part of the reason
why John Hiatt made it into this is I discovered John Hiatt much later. So I only really discovered John Hiatt in like 92, 93, 94, years after some of these albums were already released. And actually, you know, his more famous album came out in the late 80s, and that's Bring the Family. But Stolen Moments is an incredible album. I mean, I'm not going to try to convince you as to why, because I know it's not your style of music, but it's actually the first John Hiatt album that I bought, and the first song that I ever heard was Bring Back Your Love to Me, which is still one of my favorite John Hiatt songs. So all of you John Hiatt fans out there, he made the list at number 8.
You know, you made it sound like I don't like him. I have nothing against him.
No, it's just not your style of music, right?
And I think you did make me, didn't you not once make me a John Hiatt tape?
Maybe, yeah, I think I tried to convince you, but...
In any case, so number 8 on my list is Radiohead, The Bends, from 1995. And I don't need to tell you about this CD. It's got High and Dry, Fake Plastic Trees... This is another one of those CDs that I did listen to a lot at the time. I mean, of course, this was my heyday, right? The 90s, the middle of the 90s. And I don't have much to say about it other than I like this CD.
Let me ask you a question. So I noticed that OK Computer didn't make your honorable mentions.
Correct. I don't own that CD, to be honest.
Spoilers. I'm going to get to Radiohead in my list, and then we can talk about the debate between the Bends and OK Computer. So
number seven
on my list is the Dave Matthews Band, and the album is called Under the Table and Dreaming. Now Crash could have also made it and deserved an honorable mention possibly, but Under the Table and Dreaming was really the album that started me on my Dave Matthews fandom. I still think that the best songs that he has are on here, including Ants Marching. That's like, I think, his best song. But, you know, there's some really amazing songs on here. Jimmy Thing, Typical Situation, What Would You Say? Like, the whole album through and through. It's one of these albums that you could actually just listen to from start to finish. So Dave Matthews is number 7.
Okay, so number 7 for me is Dave Matthews Band, Under the Table and Dreaming, from 1994.
Did you consider Crash or not even? Or
not really, no, because, I mean, Ants Marching is one of my favorite songs, so I had to include it somehow. Oh, we
police cars and up on the sidewalk. People in every direction. No words exchanged, no time to exchange.
And that's another thing. I mentioned that, you know, to get an album onto this list, it sort of has to be good through and through. But sometimes there's albums that have only one good song. But if that song is really, really good, I didn't want to penalize that album. So I couldn't eliminate this album. I couldn't.
So you could have put Britney Spears, you know, because of Hit Me Baby One More Time.
But I don't even own that CD. Like the other prerequisite was I had to own the album in order to get on my list.
100%.
Number six.
All right. So number six is sort of a departure from some of the bands we're going to hear, in that it's a classic rock artist, but who was still making great music well into the 90s and still today. And that's Peter Gabriel. And the album is Us. Now, obviously, the So album, you know, with Red Rain and Sledgehammer and all those big hits was his big breakthrough. That was in 86. But Us in 1992 is, for me, a way stronger album. It's just more mature. It's less, well, I mean, it's less poppy, right? Because obviously, you know, like Sledgehammer and some of those songs were really very, very mainstream. This album is through and through, like one song to the next, you can just go from track to track. They're all great, you know? And then for me, the highlights are the first song and the last song, and what the first song is Come Talk to Me, and the last song is Secret World. And those, you know, bookend this album perfectly, you know, like starts off strong and strong. The middle's great, great album.
If my memory serves, I went to see Peter Gabriel live in concert at the Montreal Forum with your sister.
That was one of my biggest, my only regret of concerts that I went to, that I didn't go to, was that concert, because she offered me that ticket and for some reason I either couldn't go, didn't want to. I don't know what the circumstances was, but I didn't end up going and I regretted it. I still think about not going to that concert.
Okay, so number six on my list is Oasis, What's the Story, Morning Glory. And
I knew it was going to be in your list. I really tried to get it into my top nine. I really tried, Josh, because it's a fantastic album. I mean,
if we're talking about CDs that I listened to a million times, this is definitely on the list. I listened to this. Yeah. I can't even tell you how many times I listened to it. And Oasis had actually a few good albums, but this one, to me, was the best one by far. I mean, it has Roll With It, it has Wonderwall, Don't Look Back in Anger, Morning Glory, even songs that were never released, like She's Electric. This is a great CD. That's all there is to it. And this was released in 1995.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, again, this is the time we were living together and you listened to this nonstop. And I wasn't a huge Oasis fan. All I knew was Wonderwall. And I was like, yeah, that's a great song, but what else? And then you played for me like the songs that didn't get radio played, like What's the Story, Morning Glory, and She's Electric. And those are amazing songs. So I, like I said, I really wanted to get that on my list. I just couldn't because I don't even own it, right? So how could I mean, I listened to it, but just not enough, you know?
Number five.
Number five for me is an artist that was in your honorable mentions, and that's Toad the Wet Sprocket. But the album, and I don't even know how to pronounce it, Dulcinea?
Yeah, Dulcinea? I sometimes say Dulcinea, but yes.
Dulcinea. Anyways, that came out in 94. Look, people are going to be saying, like, who the hell are Toad the Wet Sprocket? But you do know, people do know many of the songs, you know, especially Fly From Heaven and Fall Down, I think was their biggest hit. But this album, from top to bottom, is incredible. And I remember we went to see them in concert at
The Spectrum?
What's the name? No.
Club Soda?
No. Club Soda. Very, very small venue. And we're talking about a couple hundred people in there, max. You know, like it was like we were just, it's like we were just at a bar and they were the bar band playing. You know, we could have just walked right up to the stage, you know. So, yeah, they were great live and it was still a great album. I still really love listening to it now, you know.
Okay, so now we get into the top five for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so now these albums get better and better, obviously. And so I mentioned, you know, the sign of a good album is when you could just put it in there, press play, and you don't have to skip any songs. Of course, when you were listening on a cassette tape, it was much harder to skip songs. But this one is on your honorable mentions list, and it made it to number 5 on my list, and it's Counting Crows, August and Everything After, which was released in 1993. This is, to me, a fantastic album.
Well, like I said, it was on my honorable mentions, right? It was on my honorable mentions, so you know I did like it. I just wasn't the hugest fan of it, you know?
This is one of my favorite albums, for sure. There's no question. Not just of the 90s, but of all time, maybe.
Wow. Big props there for the Counting Crows, yeah?
Yeah. You know, they get some flack. I don't know why. I think they were really great.
Well, they kind of just faded away, right? They had another album after that, and it was also very strong. And sort of that was it. And they didn't really keep going, you know?
Number 4.
All right, you ready for my number 4?
I'm ready for your number 4.
It was already on your list. It's Radiohead, The Bends from 1994. Now, it's funny because if you would read articles about Radiohead, the history of Radiohead, almost unanimously, people will tell you OK Computer is their masterpiece. I want to tell you that when OK Computer came out, I was never so disappointed. because I love The Bends so much, right? That when their next album came, there was such anticipation. And I was like, it's okay. It was weird. It had this weird, you know, vibe to it. And I just didn't love it. Because The Bends is so freaking good, right? And it's not just High and Dry, which is the song everybody knows, and maybe Fake Plastic Trees. But, like, there's some great songs on here. You know, My Iron Lung is such a great song. And even the song The Bends, right? And the other song, I think it's the song Just, right? Where they had that crazy music video with the guy lying in the street.
Yes, I think that's the name of the song. How you do it to yourself, you do.
That's why it's you do it to yourself, just you. Yeah, I mean, this is such a great album. I mean, Radiohead is most famous. Their most famous song is Creep. That's their most famous song, and that's from their debut album before The Bends. Mm-hmm. But that album is very... Creep is really, that's it. You know, it's not a great album, but sort of what introduced Radiohead to the world. And then The Bends really, they just sort of followed up on that same sound and kept it going, you know.
So this happens to a lot of artists where they have this great CD and no one was expecting it. It sort of comes out of nowhere. And then everyone then expects that their next CD is going to be just as good or even better. And so a lot of people will purchase the next album without even hearing anything from it yet, thinking this has to be good, right? It's, how could it not be? And then it isn't.
Yeah, but the thing is that the thing that really, like, I tried so hard to like OK Computer because so many critics just love it. And the more I listen to it, I'm like, I just can't. You know, I just can't. Because the sound changed. Their sound changed. They got a little bit different. They tried to experiment. And I just like the sound of The Bends better.
Okay, so number 4 on my list, I'm pretty sure this was also on your honorable mentions, The Wallflowers, Bringing Down the Horse from 1996. It's another one of those CDs that I played over and over and over again, and you could play it from start to finish, and you didn't have to skip any songs. You know, The Wallflowers, they sort of came and went pretty quickly.
This their only album? Or
I think they had another one after this, but I couldn't even tell you what it's called or any songs from it. You know, and obviously the lead singer is the son of Bob Dylan, right? But you know, they didn't, I don't think they became popular because Jacob Dylan used his name to get popular. Because when I heard of the Wallflowers, I didn't even know who the lead singer was at first. I just like their sound and I like the music. So,
yeah, no, great album. Great album. And it's totally 90s album. Yeah.
Number 3.
All right, Josh, number 3. This is where things get controversial on my list. So, number 3 is the greatest Canadian band of all time, The Tragically Hip. And you could have flipped the coin for between road apples and fully completely for me. I still feel weird about putting fully completely on the list and leaving road apples in the honorable mention. But fully completely is my number three. And just because it is the more, it's the more thorough album. It's the better overall album. Like, I love some of the songs on Road Apples, obviously, you know, Cordelia and Three Pistols and Little Bones. Like, those are classics and great rockin' songs. But Fully Completely, from 1 to 12, I mean, what an album. And I remember getting it, and this is the opposite of OK Computer. Like, we were coming off of a high after Road Apples, anticipating the next Tragically Hip album badly, wanting new music. And then getting that Fully Completely CD, putting it in the CD player, and I was just like, holy crap. One song after another, right? Like, how freaking good, you know, Courage, Looking for a Place to Happen, 100th Meridian, Pigeon Camera, Locked in the Trunk of a Car, Fully Completely, 50 Mission Cap. This is like Wheat Kings. Like, what a freaking album, you know, honestly. So just great. And the one thing I'm going to say about this album, and I do hope it's in your list, Josh, in between Road Apples and Fully Completely, the song Highway Girl got a lot of radio airplay in Canada, in the live version of the song Highway Girl, which was this super long song where he told this crazy story about this murder-suicide pact, the girlfriend and everything. And I remember the first time listening to Fully Completely, the album, I was like, man, they took some rambling story that Gord Downie said on stage, some crazy rambling story during Highway Girl, and they turned it into a whole album. Right? Because that song, Locked in the Trunk of a Car, is exactly from the story that he told in Highway Girl. And I always thought that was just so amazing. So anyways, I hope it's on your list. We're going to see.
And I think Highway Girl is actually from their first ever album that most people don't even know about.
Yeah, yeah.
So number three on my list is Ben Folds 5, and another one of the CDs that doesn't have a title, so it's just called Ben Folds 5. This was released in 1995, and it's got a bunch of great songs. And I listened to this over and over and over again. Obviously, it's got, you know, Best Imitation of Myself, Julianne, Where Summer Be, all kinds of other good stuff, Uncle Walter. A funny story about this actual CD, like the one that I own. I didn't purchase this CD. I was in New York once visiting your friend Mark, actually. And I don't know how, but I met this girl. I was only there for a few days, and I met this girl, and we just hung out for a few hours. I never saw her again. I think she lived somewhere not far from Mark, so I was at her apartment, and we were talking about Ben Folds, and she gave me her CD. And she even, inside, she wrote her name and her address and her email address. She went to Columbia, so her email address is a Columbia email address, and her phone number.
What an amazing story.
And
oh
then,
my God.
And then I never saw her again. I never spoke to her. I don't know why I didn't call her or email her. I have no idea why.
But your copy of the CD has her contact info at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all, I don't know if you're able to see, but,
That is absolutely incredible, Josh. That is amazing. Oh my God. That's wild. So Whatever and Ever I Meant didn't make it. This is your Ben Folds.
Oh, I prefer this one to that one for sure.
Uh-huh. But you didn't mention Whatever and Whatever I Meant in your honorable mention.
You know what? I could have, but I kept my honorable mentions to 10 only. That's why I could have easily put it in there.
Number two.
All right. So, I'm segueing perfectly into Ben Folds, because my number two is Ben Folds, Whatever and Ever, Amen.
Okay.
Now we did a whole episode about Ben Folds. So we don't have to go into, like, people can revisit that episode. It's from a few months ago. Whatever and Ever, Amen is just such a solid album through and through. It has probably his biggest hit, which is Brick, the song that sort of broke Ben Folds into radio airplay, and then many, many other great songs, including my favorite Kate, and Evaporated, and I just love it. And at the time, like part of my, I told you at the beginning of this, part of the time is I try to remember how much I listened to it at the time, which was nonstop, and how much do I still listen to it, which is often. So that's how it got into number two.
All right. Awesome. Mm-hmm. So number two for me, and so you were mentioning how this is where it gets controversial. I could have probably flipped number two and number one, but...
Oh, I could have flipped 1, 2, 3, 4, I think, on mine.
Yeah. So number two for me is Green Day and Dookie. So this is from 1994, man. One of my favorite CDs of all time.
You had the poster in your room.
That's right, I did. I completely forgot about that. I gave that poster to Pam. I think she has it now.
Yeah.
She's a bigger Green Day fan than I am. And I think this was actually Green Day's second album, but no one had really heard about them until this one came out. And right. One of the great things about this album, it's really short. Like, you can listen to the whole thing in less than 40 minutes, I think.
Well, and most of the songs are like, even all their songs are just like 2 minutes and 2.5 minute songs.
Right. Right. They're all short songs, and there's 14 of them, but still they're all short. So that's another thing I liked about it. But it's got Basket Case and Long View, When I Come Around. You might even say that every song is very similar to each other, but like it's so high tempo from beginning to end. It's just great. Mm-hmm. And cool. On the back of the CD, I don't think you own this CD, but on the back of the CD, I'm not sure if you can see the picture on the back. Do you see who that is?
That's Ernie from Ernie and Bert fame.
Correct.
Yeah. That's great.
Number one.
All right, Josh, we've arrived at number one.
We have.
I think I know what your number one is now, just by process of elimination. But we won't go there. My number one is Pearl Jam's 10, which came out in 1991. And, most people will say that, it's mostly recognized that Pearl Jam and Nirvana were the start of the whole grunge scene and music, which was a huge part of the 90s. I was never a fan of Nirvana. I thought that, they were okay. I much preferred Pearl Jam, and the album 10 is an iconic album, Even Flow, Jeremy, Black, they're the whole album through and through is incredible. And still to this day, when I hear Alive was the song that sort of broke them into radio airplay. But it's just an incredible album, and still, you can still listen to it from start to finish today, and it's still relevant all these years later.
That's a very good number one. So number one for me is the Tragically Hip Road Apples from 1991.
But like I said, I could have flipped the coin. If you ask me tomorrow, I might choose Road Apples over Fully Completely, honestly.
I think part of the reason, it's not that I don't like Fully Completely, it's that Fully Completely was almost too commercial. Like, it got very popular, and anytime anyone talks about the Hip or mentions any Hip songs, they always mention that album. And it is a very popular album, there's no question, but I feel that Road Apples doesn't get enough love. I mean, obviously, if you're a diehard Hip fan from day one, then you know about it. But some people only discovered the Hip with Fully Completely. They don't know anything about them before that. So, but this has, you listed some of the songs. Little Bones and Three Pistols. For me, of all the Hip CDs, this is my favorite one for sure.
And you mentioned Phantom Power, right? That was in your honorable mentions, is that right?
Correct.
Yeah, so can you imagine three albums they had in the 90s that actually all could have been in this list? Because Phantom Power actually has my favorite Hip song, which is Bob Cajun. That's their number one song, for me, personally. And that's on Phantom Power. So that's pretty incredible.
It's because I didn't realize this even till the other day when I was looking through all my CDs. In the 90s, the Hip they came out with a new CD almost every second year. So yeah, I think they came out with five new albums in the 90s, which is how many bands do that? Five albums in a decade?
Yeah, that's nuts. Yeah.
So that was the other thing. So there was a lot to choose from with them.
Yeah, that's good. I love your list, Josh. It's really, really strong.
Yours is great too.
So I did a little bit of research just to tell you. I looked up, if you look up Rolling Stone magazine's top albums of the 90s,
mm-hmm,
I'll give you Rolling Stone's top 10 just for reference. Pavement, which is a Crooked Rain, which I don't even really know. Beck, Odelay, which I thought might get onto your list. The Notorious B.I.G. obviously not our style of music. Nirvana, In Utero, which is not even Nevermind album. That's another album. Pearl Jam 10, which we mentioned. Lauryn Hill, Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Obviously hip-hop fans know that. U2, Achtun Baby, which was in my honorable mentions. I really, really tried to get it into my top 9. It really, I feel like it almost deserves it. But anyways, Radiohead, OK Computer. We've talked enough about that. Dr. Dre, The Chronic, and the number one album of the 90s on Rolling Stone was Nirvana, Nevermind. But
okay, so none of the same for me.
But more, if you look at the top selling albums of the 90s, just complete sales, like think of these, right? Backstreet Boys, Spice Girls, Alanis Morissette, Hootie and the Blowfish, which we mentioned. The soundtrack for The Bodyguard was a humongous selling album. And then let's not forget Mariah Carey and Janet Jackson, two of the biggest selling artists of the 90s. And then, of course, Billy Ray Cyrus, if you like country music. So those are some of them that really we didn't even mention at all, but just to sort of set the stage of what was actually popular.
The Skip and Josh podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. If you listen to the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave a review. To interact with the show, send an email to skipandjoshshow@gmail.com. Follow the show on Twitter @skipandjosh, and go to facebook.com/skipandjosh to like the show page. To see links mentioned on today's episode, go to skipandjosh.com. And now for some final thoughts from the guys.
So I mentioned last week that we were watching, in my household, we're watching the show The Crown.
Yeah.
All those people out there that are not watching The Crown, get on this. Because
I'm one of them.
I can't recommend it enough. Maybe it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I really can't recommend it enough. And we watched it completely in the wrong way, in that we watched season one years ago when it first came out, and then we put it away and we didn't continue it. And then since then, season 2, 3, and 4 were all released. Season 4 just this week, last week, I think, or recently anyways. And so we decided we're going to go watch season 4. We're going to jump right to season 4. We're going to jump ahead. So we watched season 4, and then now we've gone back and we watched all of season 2, and now we're ready to watch season 3. So I don't necessarily recommend watching it in that way, but that's the way we did it. So.
Sounds very confusing.
It's really quite a great show. They really make it look like this is exactly what happened. Although, you know, it's a completely fictional show, just sort of loosely based on true events. But like, they really make you believe that like the Queen and Margaret Thatcher actually had this exact conversation that they had, which no one actually knows if they did or not, you know?
Right.
They know they spoke, but no one knows what they said. So it's really quite amazing. So I would recommend that show. And of course, The Mandalorian, I mean, but that's not for you, Josh.
Well, I mean, if you want to know what I'm watching now, I started watching How I Met Your Mother from the beginning because
There's too many.
Oh, no, you don't understand. It's perfect. I only got on board on that show in maybe season 7 or 8. And there were only 9 seasons, actually. And I didn't, at the time, obviously, there was no Netflix. So I didn't start from the beginning. I just started from wherever. And I loved the show. And now that I have this opportunity to watch from the beginning, this is actually perfect. You're right. There are too many because there's 9 seasons and there's like 20-something episodes per season. But I'm going to be stuck indoors for the next 6 months because of the winter and the pandemic. So what else do I have to do?
Yeah, you're right. Actually, shows with a lot of episodes are perfect during this time, right? Yeah.
I'm actually having this debate with myself. What's going to happen first? I finish watching every episode of How I Met Your Mother, or the pandemic is over?
Well, let's see. What's the over-under?
I don't know. I mean, some days I watch, you know, 2-3 episodes because they're only 22 minutes each. Right. Other days I don't watch any at all. By the way, what I love about the show, just to let you know, I mean, I know you've seen it. I wish I was Barney. Barney is hilarious. I wish I was him.
But Barney is that's Neil Patrick Harris, right?
Yes. But I wish I was him. But in actuality, I'm Ted.
Yes, you are Ted. You are 100% Ted.
I wish I was Barney, but I am actually Ted.
That's so great. I love that. It's so perfect, Josh. Oh my God. Anyways, that's great. I'm glad you're watching it. Enjoy. I mean, I've seen the show many times. I just haven't seen every episode. And I think at the end you do find out who his wife is.
Yes, you do. In the second to last episode, I think.
Yeah. All right. Great talking to you.
So now I'm going to tell you our next topic.
Let's hear it. What is it?
So this means you're going to have a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. So it's favorite songs with the name of a city in the title.
That's really good. Okay. Songs with a city in the title. City? It has to be a city, or could it be a place, like a province or a country?
So I was going to say, yes, it could be a province, it could be a state, and it could be a country. Yes.
Okay. Like, so Sweet Home Alabama will...
Well, yeah, that qualifies.
Not that it's on my list, but it's there.
That qualifies. All right.
Good. Okay, a lot of research.
Yeah.
All right. Speak to you next time.
Okay, bye.